We were studying Ecclesiastes chapter 5 in this last class, and we finished covering the effects of riches. We saw the effects of riches were oppression, were discontent, were hoarding to your own hurt, and that was all futility, all vanity. And we saw the recommended way to live was to enjoy what we have, enjoy the riches and the wealth God gave us. And we've seen this recommendation several times, and in each instance we've seen it is exactly that, a gift from God. He's given us these things, and He's given us the power to use of them. Then we should enjoy it and use it. Here in the end of chapter 5, we also saw another explanation besides just it being the gift of God, our portion and our heritage. In verse 20, it says, starting in verse 19, as for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. And see, here he's talking about just another reason we have to enjoy what we have, is so that we've read all the things in life are vanity or futility, and we read also, looking back on the man who hoards in verse 18, what became of him when he lost all his riches? He dwelled on his loss, and he just brought sorrow and angerness and sickness to himself. And so by not dwelling on the futility of life, I mean, we know it's futility, and if you focus on that, you're gonna make yourself this, you know, it's going to be that much less enjoyable. So enjoy it, and then you won't dwell on that. You know, take your mind off of it, and your life would be a lot better off. You'd be busy with your enjoyment versus the futility, which is inevitable. There's nothing we can change about that, so we don't need to dwell on it. We occupy ourselves with good, with goodness, that which God gave us. And so all our labors, our riches, our pleasures, all the wisdom we gain, everything we can think of in this earth is vanity, is futility. And pleasure, enjoyment is futility, but at least you can enjoy it, and it'll take your mind off of it. You know, the old, you know, what does it say?
Idleness. Yeah.
Well, no, I was looking for times like that. You know, when you're time flies fast when you're having fun. Time goes by. You're not focused on the time. You're focused on the enjoyment, and it just zips on by. And so that's the recommendation we have from Solomon. And we don't need to dwell on the futility at all. And it'll just end up in bitterness and you know, grief and anger, as we read in verse 18. So that was the end of chapter 5. Do we have any comments about that before we go through the review and start chapter 6?
Does your version say bitterness in verse 17? Oh, no, you have New King James.
I have New King James. No, I don't say bitterness.
Mine says vexation.
Mine is, in all his days he also eats in darkness. He has much sorrow, sickness, and anger. New American Standard has 15, 17. Vexation. And all the rest of the same. Anyway, so what are we going to do with our lives?
Enjoy it.
Right, you're going to enjoy it, right? what you can. You enjoy the things we've been given. And so a review of the book, keep our minds on track. Who was the author of Ecclesiastes?
Solomon.
Solomon. And the question in the book that's being answered?
What is the advantage of profit and wisdom?
That's right. What profit does man have under the sun? And that answers the focus of the book. Well, what is the portion of human life we're in consideration
here?
Yeah, life under the sun. Everything in this life. And I keep asking that same question over and over again because we got to keep it in our heads. What this is all about is just life under the sun. That's the aspect in which we're, the context of all these verses. And, of course, we just read what the recommendation was. What is the author recommended over and over again? How to live life?
Enjoy the blessings you have while you're here.
That's right. Enjoy the blessings we have while we're here. And the outline of the book. So we have the introduction in the first couple of verses. And then followed by...
Observations of life.
Good. Observations of life. And everything we've seen in life. And what chapters were those?
1:4-6:12.
That's correct. And what came next after observations? Somebody can answer the second time.
She knows.
That's right. Wisdom and application for life. And beginning in chapter 7 through...
12:8.
Very end. And then we follow up the conclusion, the last four verses.
What do you do with 6:13-12? Oh, it only goes through 20. I'm sorry.
Yeah, 6:12 is the end of the chapter.
Yes, it is.
Yes, sir.
We're talking about the beginning of Ecclesiastes, about the question and the answer.
Yes.
We probably have read this thing over and over again, but it's kind of interesting that when you usually raise a question, you raise the question, and you provide an answer. When you're making an argument, you make here's the point of argument, and then you have a conclusion. We read these things, it appeared to me that the answer is given, and then the question follows that. It's kind of a weird logical statement, just an observation that I noted. And I guess one consideration might be is that this question he's asking, the answer is so obvious. It keeps stressing over and over again. They seize the answer first, almost as if it's an axiom or it's so plain, it's so clear that he doesn't even have to introduce the question first.
Yeah.
So just an observation that you read this thing and we're talking about the question and the answer, but the reverse.
Yeah, he answers his question before he even puts it. Yeah, he answers it before he asks it. And I don't know, I guess you could say it is very painfully obvious, but at the same time, it's not the answer we want to hear, is it? I don't think it's the answer anyone wants to hear. We want to find something that's profitable. And everyone's grappled with that concept to some extent. And here we have, Solomon. It's like, no, yep, this is the answer. And it's the obvious one. Even though it's the one we don't like. A lot of men and women seek to do things and think it's, why would we do anything that's not profitable? We want to find profit in what we're doing, so we're spending our time on it. But in the end, it is all futility.
That's a note. Solomon asked for wisdom from God, so we're looking at God's wisdom because through Solomon, but that's a whole different perspective versus what we think here.
Yes, and we know that's why we trust in his conclusions here. It's because of all the things he had available to him that he could delve into the different depths of human life, and then also the fact. Besides just that that ability, he was given inspiration, the wisdom of God, or it's more excelled wisdom than any other man. Chapter 6. We're continuing with we're still in the observations of life under the sun, and. We just went through the recommendation of showing all the different things that, what not to have, what's it, in chapter 5. We went through what the recommended way to live is, to live for enjoyment. And he starts this chapter, and the very thing he shows is that there's a common evil under the sun, and it's that men don't have enjoyment. They live their life without enjoyment. They're not living according to the recommendation. And I wanted to point out, in verse 1 it says, there is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. So this evil is common. How do we define common?
The same thing.
Happens to all.
Yeah, we see it a lot, right? Common, we look it up, is occurring or appearing frequently. And I put some synonyms. The, you know, it's prevalent, routine, it's usual, every day. It's something that happens frequently, all the time, and not just to a few people, to a lot of people. And what is that common evil? And we read on in verse 2. Common evil among men, a man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity and evil affliction. And I think that the common evil here is just the lack of enjoyment in men's lives, not specifically that you gain and then someone takes away, but that happens frequently enough as well. So, so here when we look at this, this man that didn't have any enjoyment, what did he possess?
Riches, wealth, and honor.
Yeah, he had riches, wealth, and honor.
That sounds like Hollywood right there to me. This is people. I mean, maybe not Hollywood, but maybe the big wigs of CEOs or corporations, because they're always working and working, but they don't even enjoy everything they have. But they have this big name, which is fame.
Yeah. Well, I guess it depends how you take the honor. Like in Hollywood or in CEOs, that's more power or fame. I looked at this honor as a respect, you know, in the community. I mean, it could be, like you said, it could be that way too. There's no, you know, firm way to say it, but or to prove it. But I took it, yeah, he has riches, he has wealth, he has, you know, he can afford anything he wants. But with that, he also has honor. You know, a thief could amass riches and wealth, but a thief, everyone, if everyone knows him for a thief, he's not going to have any honor. So he's going to be socially ostracized to some extent. There's going to be limitations on what he can do and what he can enjoy, you know, just besides his wealth. But here this man has wealth and honor. I read it as, you know, there's no proving it. Like I said, it's the, you know, this man who, it came to him legally, you know, in the socially acceptable norm. He has honor. And so, you know, he's able to, he's part of the society, you know, and that affords him the ability to have other enjoyments, you know, that, that come with that. you know, society, friendship, so forth, all these different things. But, you know, specifically it says, he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires. So there isn't anything that he can't get. He can get it. Anything he desires, it's available to him. So financially, socially, you know, I guess you can think of it, if it is that, like I said, an honor, you know, criminal, people aren't going to give their daughters to this person in marriage, being a terrible person. But with honor, oh, this guy's respected. Yeah, sure, here's you know, a wife, you know, and all sorts of those other things are open. So he has everything he needs to find enjoyment, but it says he doesn't. Why doesn't he?
Somebody else does.
Yeah, somebody else eats of his fruits, right? And a foreigner comes and consumes it. So he doesn't get to have anything. And it's also mentioned it's by the power of God. God has not given him the power to eat of his fruits. So if we also look in chapters 3 of 13... just to point out the same idea. We know, let's see, what is, okay, yeah, in 13, this is, you know, the recommendation we were just reading. Also that every man should eat, drink, and enjoy the good of all his labor. It's the gift of God. And more so in chapter 5, 19, where we just finished. Yes, for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage in his labor, this is a gift from God. Evidently, this man, he was given riches and honor, but he wasn't given the gift to eat of it. he didn't have the power to enjoy it. And so, well, let's...
Michael, did you take that as being wisdom or power, like, to like handle it, or how did you...
Well, yeah, that's what we're about to get into. A little bit of both, yeah. Because we know... what this guy had was taken from him, and someone else consumed it. So it was forcibly removed in some way. It was not given him the opportunity to eat of it at some point in time. But, you know, I also want to point out, you know, this he says he attained great wealth, or attained wealth and riches. But he never got to enjoy of it. Ask, well, how is that possible? You know, did they have a lottery back then? He won it one night, and then the next day they declared the lottery bankrupt. Sorry. Oh, man, didn't get it. You know, to have riches and wealth usually takes some amount of time, doesn't it? You don't just wake up one morning and suddenly you got it when you were living in a cardboard box.
Well, I looked at it more as he had the rich and wealth, but didn't take the time to enjoy it. Like he didn't, you know, take the time to smell the roses type of thing. You know, he was too busy. You know, he could still be busy trying to create more wealth, and he just didn't take time to enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's the way I read it.
You gotta go ahead, David.
I mean, you allude to it later on the next sentence on chapter 6, but I mean, you look at this thing in a foreigner, the only way I think the foreigner could get it was maybe like a bad investment, or he chose to use his money in a different way. I don't know if maybe he went to war and lost it, or if it was a bad investment, but somehow it's changed hands.
Yeah. I don't know where I was getting here with this bit. Nothing that, you know, can prove, nothing definitive, but looking at, usually it takes time to gain wealth. It's, I put here, a probable case of hoarding, and what, you know, we've just seen in the previous chapter, that while he did have it, or, you know, was beginning to possess it, he didn't enjoy it, and then at some point, everything he did have was taken away. You know, that can't be, you know, I can't prove that, and, you know, don't know that for certain. We do know for a fact, though, that maybe he was planning, like I said, he was hoarding it. I'm going to enjoy it when I get here. And then he never got that opportunity. We know he never got that opportunity. It was taken away. It's not really important. We just know he didn't get to enjoy what he had. And it calls it an evil affliction. I'm jumping ahead now. But I was moving on to the next point. David pointed out that he said there's no reason or explanation was given. He talked about maybe he lost in a bad investment. Maybe it was in a time of war, a foreigner came in and took what he had. You know, it could be a tribute. That's not necessarily war, but, you know, alliances are made and someone's like, we need this to give to them to peace. So, you know, you think of in war, he was killed and it was all taken from him. And, you know, tribute, he may live, it was taken from him. Religion really isn't important. We know in the end, the end result is unchanged. He doesn't have what he had, and he didn't get to enjoy it. I had a few verses, specifically just kind of examples of showing this is the case through the Bible. I like the first one the best. In Deuteronomy, chapter 6. Beginning in verse 10 through 11. God's talking to Israel about the land they're going to inherit. And it says, so it shall be, when the Lord your God brings you into the land of which he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities, which you did not build, houses full of all good things, which you did not fill, hewn out wells, which you did not dig, vineyards and olive trees which you did not plant. You see, we see this same occurrence. Of course, we're talking about here is the Amorites and Hittites, the peoples of Canaan. They built these cities, they dug these wells, they planted these vineyards, and God came in and removed them, and destroyed them, and gave everything they had to the Israelites. And so that was, of course, we know that was a judgment on their nation. All their possessions were given to the Israelites. And I don't know, just the wording stuck with me. But we also see the same thing in Luke chapter 12, where the rich man, you know, gathers up for himself in barns all his riches, and then that night his soul was required of him, and it says, who will possess the things which you have gathered? We see the same thing. And here, of course, we think, believe it means, you know, his death. And in his ultimate judgment, But yeah, when he died, all his possessions were taken away. He hoarded it, and then it's left out. Now I'll enjoy it, but didn't get the chance. Like I said, the result's the same. These people didn't take an opportunity to enjoy it, or just never were given the opportunity. And it's an evil affliction to live life and not have the ability, given those things, and not to enjoy them. To carry out the very recommendation he gives man is to enjoy what you have. This man didn't get the opportunity for whatever reason. Ultimately, because of God's will, it was taken away. Do anyone have any further comments on that? Anything to add?
Fine.
Yes, sir.
The setting of this, there was no Hollywood. This was not CEOs of companies. Those were good points. This might just be, in this setting, you had farmers, for example. Suppose a farmer had a big flock of sheep, and maybe a land that bore crops. And so he was prosperous. Why didn't he enjoy it? And like you said, we don't know. It could be, not that he's trying to hoard, but maybe he kept busy with his crop and sheep. And so he didn't enjoy his wife or the kids or his family or his house. And so that's the first thing, because if we're not careful, we're going to put this in a category that doesn't apply to us. And so that's the ultra-rich and the ultra-powerful. Turn it around. If someone in Mexico reads this, what might they use as an example of somebody that's like this guy?
Yeah, all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly.
And this is what you see all around. People are busy with their lives and their possessions and everything that they don't enjoy.
Yeah.
They got to do it, like you said, when they retire, but then they got better work.
Exactly. So yeah, this does apply to all of us. You know, we need to live to the author's recommendation, enjoying life. We can't be certain, oh, I'll do it later, because we don't know if we'll get it later. Or, you know, and that's, of course, you know, assuming death. But, you know, like you know, everything of this world is, you know, like the economy. We go to, because that's the big thing right now, but we don't have wars as often as they used to back then, where people come in and take your stuff, but a lot of people lost their fortunes. You know, here recently, I was going to enjoy it, and then, oh, it's gone. Well, got to keep on working just as hard as they ever did. They, you know, they didn't enjoy what they had when they had it. Now they have less.
Mike, you know, there's another thing too. I think the lesson in this, and that's, you know, some people just get a lot of satisfaction out of work. Okay, but. One of the things they reap some benefits from work, but they don't share. You do get satisfaction out of sharing what you have. Just like the man that was erecting larger, bigger barns, is your example. You know, he could have given some of his riches or wealth away as opposed to building bigger. If he had too much wealth and he's trying to build bigger barns to house more wealth, he could have given that away. And that is a form of enjoyment.
Yeah, well,
and giving back, and but you know, I can remember people close to me saying, you know, obtaining wealth was a lot more fun than having it, and because they got so much enjoyment out of their jobs, and so I don't know do you get enjoyment? I guess that's my question.
You saying
is that enjoyment?
Is he getting some enjoyment from their job? I don't know. I don't think anyone enjoys working. They might enjoy, like you're saying, the result of their work is to look at everything I get.
Mm-hmm. I think some people do enjoy working.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they do. Maybe there's some strange people out there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I agree with you, Michael. It's totally right. I don't enjoy sometimes teaching my kids because I just want to beat them with the stick. But I enjoy the results afterwards and I see the profit. Under some, but I see the results afterwards and their learning and how they perform. And for us at other work, in like the secular world, you might go in and Steve's profit might be somebody coming up to be baptized, or somebody learning knowledge, and yours might be, okay, I got a bonus, now I can do more for my family, but, I mean, I can see it being a result, but I can't see anybody just sit there enjoying working, and there's not being any profit, well, not profit, but results enjoying to it.
I don't know.
It's clear it's not that guy in the text.
Yeah, I was going to say,
if it's that guy in the text, he does enjoy it, this guy does.
Yeah, that's about to get on track. It's, we don't know the instance of what's going on here. All we know is he didn't enjoy it. You know, maybe some people do enjoy working. But this guy, whatever he was doing, he didn't have the enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And that's really the only, you don't want to stick in too much other stuff. You know, like we're assuming he spent all his time working. It doesn't say that. It says he had riches and wealth and he never enjoyed it. And so that's the point we need to take away is, you know, whatever you find enjoyment in, this guy didn't find enjoyment in what he was doing. He had the opportunity to fulfill his desires, and before he did, he lost that opportunity and was gone. And so, he should have taken the opportunity when he had it, before it was taken away. And you like saying, you know, maybe giving away would bring enjoyment? That's, you know, that's possible. Whatever would have brought this guy enjoyment, he didn't act on it to get it. And so, to speculate why he was, what he was doing and whatnot, is sort of getting off the context. We didn't know whatever he was doing, it's not stated, there was no enjoyment in his life. And it's an evil affliction. My footnote calls it an evil disease. Yeah, that's something that, you know, sounds bad, it's, you know, and it sounds contagious. And the fact that this is common among men kind of, you know, appears that way. It might lead back to the rivalry and other people competition.
I'm just thinking, you can't really pin that on any one thing because Solomon said he did it all. There's nothing that you don't know because he did it all. I mean, so there's nothing uncovered here. Solomon said he experienced everything under the sun. He had the resources to do that very thing. That was what his mission was, or his objective, if you will, was. So we, as you said, you don't know. There's no way. He did it all.
Yeah, well, we know his recommendation is enjoy life. And here we got a man who didn't. And it's not just a single guy, but it's something common. And it's something we have to make application in our lives. Not to let this happen to us. When we move on to verses 3 through 5, we see another case added onto this. In 3 through 5, I call it the family man without enjoyment. If a man begets 100 children and lives many years, so that the days of his years are many, but his soul is not satisfied with goodness, or indeed he has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better than he. For it comes in vanity and departs in darkness, and its name is covered with darkness. Though it has not seen the sun or known anything, this is more rest than that man. And so, what do we see that this man possessed, that this man had, that might have brought him enjoyment?
100 children.
And then we have the answer in the question right there. That's why he didn't have any input. He had 100 kids. That's not me, so I'm going to be all right. No. You know, he's making a point here. We find... What else does he have? Oh, and also, besides the children, he lives many years. So he gets what everyone wants to have. You know, he has a large family. A lot of people want family. You know, the people who are alone especially want family. They have a large family, so this man's probably never alone. And he gets to live a long time. And he gets to enjoy that family. And however large it grows, to see, wow, look at what my family grew into. Find some enjoyment in that. Enjoyment with his family. Enjoyment in the number of years he's given to live. And what do we have for his reason of lack of enjoyment? Because he didn't enjoy it. What was his reason? Soul was not satisfied. So it sounds, did he have goodness in his life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sounds like he had it. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't satisfied with it. He didn't... I lost track of what I was going to say.
Content.
Well, it's a matter of contentment. He didn't you know, he got to enjoy some, I don't want to say unenjoying things, but he got to participate in things that would bring enjoyment, you know, and with his family, with his, whatever desires he had. But he didn't allow those activities that should have brought him enjoyment. He didn't, he wasn't satisfied with them. He had, he just didn't let it bring him enjoyment like it should have brought him. And he maybe he's, whatever the reason is, he didn't enjoy it, even though he was participating in things that should have got him enjoyment, he didn't let his heart really, you know, bring it in. As I guess, you know, if you're, maybe it's an analogy, it might not be good, but okay, I've got a meal prepared, I'm going to eat it, but I'm just going to eat some of it. And so I wasn't fully satisfied. I partook of the meal, but I wasn't really satisfied afterwards. I walked away wishing for more, wanting more. And so what little I had that I could have enjoyed, there was a bitterness behind it that took away the enjoyment he could have had. He had some of the meal. Now, this is an analogy, and you know, not exact, but that's the idea. He partook of these activities, and then he didn't allow himself to enjoy them, or he didn't give it to the full extent of what he maybe wanted. And that fact that he didn't get that full extent made him bitter about it. It hid the enjoyment he could have had, the pleasure. And so we see here that a stillborn is better than this man. And why do we see that? We see a stillborn is better than this man. We know a stillborn's life is complete futility. It comes and departs quickly. You know, the very essence of futility. And a child knows nothing. It sees nothing. It doesn't get to experience anything. And this man doesn't have the stillborn has more rest than that man. Why is that? How do you take that?
I think you're on track with the turmoil adversity. I think of people at work that they don't enjoy their family and their kids because they don't, they have all these things they work for them, but they don't, try to spend time or whatever, and there's some adversity maybe that comes about because of that. They'd rather be able to work and get more enjoyment out of that than being at home and their family and enjoying the good things.
Yeah, if we don't have enjoyment, everyone's going to have some adversities in life, right? So if you're not getting some enjoyment to counterbalance it, then your life is just going to be filled of adversity, of turmoil, of unpleasantness. Craig?
Yeah, just something in the text where it's talking about the soul is not satisfied with the good things. I might not be understanding what they mean by that, but I think it's implying when it's talking about he has 100 children and all of this time, and it says that his soul is not satisfied with these good things, and then it also says that he does not enjoy the good things. It says that in verse 6. And then within there, it also said that it didn't even have a proper burial. So it tells us something about having these children and all this time, and to me, it implies something about his relationship with his children. He had these blessings, and he didn't take advantage of the blessing of his children, which it could be not limited to that if we think about our relationships that God allows us.
Yeah. I would agree with you that there's something lacking in his relationship with his family. He's not finding any enjoyment of it, then there's something wrong there. maybe your reference to burial has to do with his family, but maybe his family's not giving him the proper burial, and that shows the breaking of the relationship.
That's just one way I was thinking of that.
I agree with you. I think I read it that way once. I was like, well, maybe it's because of this, and then I was like, well, it's hard to say that. I mean, and it also depends on your translation. Because, I think mine says, if he has no, his soul is not satisfied with goodness, mine says, or, indeed, he has no burial, I say the stillborn child is better than he. So that doesn't necessarily point to two in the same. It's more like, we know that the Jewish people considered a lack of burial horrible, horrible thing. So it's sort of like a comparison. Look, this guy has no life, no enjoyment in life. He's like that guy who didn't get buried. Ugh. You know, and that's if you have that translation. I have another translation, I think the New American Standard. Where? Oops, I don't get back too far. Verse 3, yeah, in verse 3, New American Standard says, his soul is not satisfied with good things, and he does not even have a proper burial. Did you have the New American? That kind of makes it seem like the two are together, and yeah, I didn't put too much about it, because I didn't want to get into it too much.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. You know, it's there, and talk about it, but, I mean, really, I think the point is made without it. You know, he has a big family, what most people want, and everybody usually wants more time in life. He's given a long life, but he didn't fill his life with anything enjoyable. So all he's left with is the turmoil and adversity of this world. A stillborn child is better than that guy. Because the stillborn child doesn't have any goodness, just like this man, but at least the stillborn doesn't have any turmoil and adversity and all the difficulties to face. He had neither. This man, he's only left with the bad stuff.
I was going to say, both this man and the stillborn both live futile lives, however long it was. And they're going to the same place. And I mean, I'm skipping down to verse 12, but, I mean, if you look at the man, what good is it when he's dead when he's going to see what his 100 children are going to do with their lives? I'm wondering if Solomon didn't put the stillborn in there for a reason to say, okay, it doesn't matter how long this guy lived. This stillborn lived a second, or however long he was alive. This guy lived 1,000 years. Both of their lives are futile. They're both going to the same place, and maybe, I don't know if this is application underneath the contest, but once this guy dies, he can't go back and see what his 100 kids have done.
I don't even know where you were going.
I know where I'm going.
I see it as... Well, you're talking about they both have futile lives, right?
Yes.
Just say you throw me in there and I enjoyed my life. Is my life less futile than theirs?
No, it's equally futile.
Yeah, it's equally futile, so they're all futile. The only thing you can get out of life is some enjoyment. It's futile, but it's something. It's better than what the stillborn has. It's better than what that other guy has. But we see here a stillborn is better than this guy. And I think, you know, most people always would pity a stillborn as, wow, he didn't get to live. What a horrible thing. Well, we should be pitying this guy. This guy lived, but he's worse off. I think that's the point that's trying to be made. This guy is, everyone wants to live longer, and we have the opportunity to enjoy things, and that's what's good. A stillborn, that poor child, never got to live, never got to enjoy anything. Well, here's a guy who lived a long, long time. Like I just said, he never got to enjoy anything. How worse is that? All he had was, you know, the troubles of this life and nothing else. He could have had it the other way. He could have had it better. He had children. He had long life. He could have changed it. And we're going to get to that. Yeah, we're going to get to that in a few more verses. The reason behind all of this. And then I was going to move on to verse 6, which is an add-on to this same man, the man, family man without enjoyment. And now we have, in verse 6, the same, but it's a different case. It's the same man, but it's talking about a different case, and it's an if. Even if the same man lives 1,000 years twice, he lives 2,000 years, but has not seen goodness, do not all go to one place. So we have a different scenario here where the man, same man, has family. Vendors get to live a long time. He gets to live a super long time. You know, 2,000 years. I mean, wouldn't that be all the time possibly needed to find some enjoyment in life? You'd think with 2,000 years you'd finally get there. But it says this man didn't. He still lacked goodness. He still lacked enjoyment. And why is that? And this is getting into a little bit of stuff later on, but, you know, is goodness something to be attained, that you need time to get to it, and I finally, I worked my way, I got here? Or is it our attitude in life? It's our attitude. It's, you know, how we use what we have. And Mr. Fonda's point in the very about verse 2, the man who had riches and wealth, doesn't say how much he had, but he had something that he could enjoy, and it was taken away. So whatever we have, we can use it to our enjoyment, however little it is, and you know, find contentment and appreciate it. And in these three cases, you know, we don't see that. It's certainly, if it was something to be attained, the guy with 2,000 years should have been able to do it. You know, if he was amassing a certain amount of riches, he would have got to that point. Or if it, you know, having 200 children would do it. In 2,000 years, he should have pulled that one off too. But he didn't have enjoyment. And so the stillborn and that man, they both go to the same place, and yet he has no enjoyment in all the adversities and troubles of the life. The end result, the stillborn's better off. It's utter, the whole life is utter vanity, you know, without any advantage at all. Without any, even any temporary gains. I don't want to say that anyone that's had any gains, but to have some pleasure and enjoyment is a temporary duration, a short duration gain. It's futile because of its duration, but at least you have it for a short time. He didn't have it at all. It's a sad state of life. Enjoy that. And so now we get to, and we've started talking about a little already, the reason men suffer this common evil, that to live lives without enjoyment, without pleasure. And beginning in verse 7 through 9, it says, "All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied. For what more has the wise man than the fool? What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind." Yeah. So, why do men suffer this fate? Or, I don't want to say fate. This evil. What does it say in the scriptures here? Specifically verse 7.
It's for his mouth.
Well, he labors for his mouth. Mm-hmm. But why, that's the idea of, you know, we labor for our mouth to for enjoyment, but why doesn't he enjoy it?
Not satisfied.
Yeah, again, we see we're not satisfied. You see,
that's a wrong perspective.
Yeah, it's a wrong perspective. He's, you know, it's a matter of discontent, right? And I also wanted to point in verse 9, it talks about it's the wandering desire. You know, again, yeah, it's the same thing, really. It's just, here's something in front of him, but he's not satisfied with that. He's looking out for something else that he doesn't have. And so, with that kind of attitude, of course, you're never going to be satisfied. If you're always looking beyond what you don't have to everything else you don't have, even if, you know, the more and more things you get, you're still not looking at those. You're looking out at everything else you still don't have. You're never going to be satisfied and enjoy it.
It's kind of like the grass is always greener on the other side, so the person's always looking for something else.
Yeah, always envious for something else. Yeah, I guess that's where we stop.